We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the podcast. The Pelicans refuse to announce any of the results of the MRI until tomorrow morning, therefore allowing us to speculate wildly as to what it possibly could be. Personally, I think he's pregnant.
Are you here to announce that you may be the father?
No, I was wondering what you were thinking there. It's usually you don't wait that long to respond.
Well, I thought you were going to go with the second part of that cliffhanger.
No, giving me time. Yeah, so we don't know. Like, obviously he wasn't sent back to, you know, get it taken care of immediately. He's stuck with the team. He had an MRI today. They're going to announce it in the morning, which means it's probably not anything great, but you can't say anything, but he's going to be out a little while and maybe a long while. That's all we know, right?
Let's overanalyze.
Let's
spend 40 minutes talking about what it could. Okay. So what are the possibilities? The possibilities. So we're 100% that they know.
Oh yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And that the doctors have one clear recommendation for a path. Do we think even, like, that's completely settled? Like, the doctors and
no.
Davis and his team
no.
know the path that they want to take?
No. So here's what I have to say about injuries of this sort, where they're at your core. There's always, like, a couple options you can go down. And one of them is, hey, hang out for a while and see if it feels better. And then then we can try some other stuff. And the problem with the, hey, hang out for a while and see if it's better, is if it doesn't feel better, then you got to take the other route. But it's better if the hanging out thing actually works. So, and you have to make a decision. You have to decide, am I going to try to do something a little bit more invasive or aggressive, or am I going to do something where I'm just hoping it calms down on its own and it goes back to where it should be and there's no big problems. And that's what happens with all these sorts of injuries. So, I have no doubt that they are probably mulling over some decisions, and we'll know what happens tomorrow, which decision they take.
Yeah, my thing, though, is that if there was any chance for surgery, don't you think he would have just come back to New Orleans yesterday as opposed to going to Portland? And like,
I think that if the surgery would clearly be the best option, but in this situation, it may not be. So it may be the option of last resort, you know.
So let's talk about the possible timetable. So I think you and I would be absolutely shocked if it was anything less than 2 weeks. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
That's accurate. In fact, 2 weeks feels like you're being pretty optimistic.
No, I'm saying that. That's why I said we would be shocked if it was less than 2 weeks. Like that,
yeah.
For anybody holding out hope that he's going to be okay by the end of the week and be playing games, and I think that's almost impossible. We're talking about best case scenario is it's like a little strain and you know, maybe he's back in 2 or 3 weeks, but most realistic, if you had to take your guesses, would be what, anywhere between
4 to 6
month? Yeah.
4 to 6 weeks. That's the easy one. I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you doing that based off of that was Rondo's timeline and it was similar region? And
no, I mean, that's what they always give you whenever there's like a core, like a muscle or tendon injury that's not going to be repaired. It's 4 to 6 weeks. You're going to come back and hopefully it'll be all the inflammation will be down and they'll be able to get themselves back into shape during those 2 weeks. It's just, it's a pretty ordinary way of dealing with those things, and 4 to 6 weeks is right. If any sort of surgery comes into play, then he's done. So,
4 to 6 weeks, we're looking at, depending on the timetable, anywhere between 14 and 19 games. What are you looking at? Let's say it skews towards the later end, which it always does with the Pelicans. Let's say he misses 18 games. The Pelicans are currently a game over 500 right now. He misses 18 more games. First of all, where do you think you have to end up? I know you thought it was higher when we did our postseason preview, our preseason preview. You thought it was in the mid-40s. Where do you think the 8th seed gets in now in the Western Conference? How many wins do you need to make it?
So if you're going based on point differential, it looks like about 44 games. 43 games. If these point differentials that are currently being posted bear out, that's what it would take to be a 8th seed.
Okay. So the Pelicans are at 12 and 11 right now. What would you say if it's 16 games, they need to, how many wins do they need to get in those games to realistically stay in that playoff picture?
I think that they could fall 3 to 4 games under 500 and still be able to make it back into it.
Okay. So 6-10, beat some of the bad teams, steal a game like they did last night, and then just hang on.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You just have to have Etuan Moore continue to be awesome.
Okay, and then the worst-case scenario, Anthony Davis tries to see if it gets better. It doesn't. Surgery winds up happening, and he's out for the season. How do you, if you're in control of the franchise for some reason, how do you approach the rest of the season? What would be your goals, and what would be your mindset?
I would. So my mindset is I'm looking for someone who might want Drew, and that's it. I'm still trying to keep Boogie around, and if I can keep him for next year, and I'm looking to clear a bunch of cap space by letting Drew walk to some other team for expirings.
And you keep Boogie and then just hope that this summer you could convince him to come back. And
yeah, you do. You basically have this summer be, hey, Boogie, we'd like to sign you. We'll offer you the world, but you have to agree that you'll wait for a few days for us to try to bring in some external players to take up the cap space, and then we'll sign you. And that would be my plan, be looking for people who could help me clear up space for next year. Although, I don't know. The way Omer is playing, we might need to have him be starting center next year, so we should probably just make DeMarcus Cousins expendable right now.
Do you ever just wonder what this franchise? I mean, like, again, I'm hoping the AD news comes back decent tomorrow, but I can't imagine why the team would wait if it was just simply it's going to be day to day or week to week. I don't know why the team would wait until tomorrow. But I mean, did you ever just think, like, if it really is terrible news, like, what the heck did this franchise do to deserve it? And are we just stupid for ever thinking that we're going to get anything other than this?
No, I mean, you're not stupid at all. It's ridiculous, though. Like, I can't understand how we've gone through 5 years of sustained bad luck. And, like, it's even more than that. Like, you go back to the year that the Hornets, you know, actually won 56 games. The following season, David West suffers a major injury at the end of the season. Like, it's been happening since then. And, like, the only seasons where we seem to have a moderate amount of health that we can be happy about are the seasons where we're tanking the crap out of the season anyways. So it doesn't matter. We're trying to get Anthony Davis. So, I don't know. It seems very unfair.
Yeah, I mean, that said, the last game we saw without Anthony Davis, they did play fairly well. I think this was easily the craziest week of the season. You had a game in which AD gets thrown out for the first time in his career, then another game when they're firmly in the lead, he gets injured. And then, of course, the third game on the second night of a back-to-back and a tough place to win with no AD, they play, in my opinion, probably their best complete game of the season. So what do you even make of this week?
I don't know. So part of it, I was traveling, so I have to admit that I did not – the first game where he got thrown out, I came back. I knew it was going to happen there, so it wasn't as much of a roller coaster for me as like the Utah game and the Portland game ended up being. But like, it's just like the Utah game was just such a kick in the nuts, because not only did you see him go out, you know, it being carried out of the building, and then they go ahead and, you know, they'd already been giving up that lead before he went out. It was such a bad game. It makes me remember the old, back when, you know, Bill Simmons was an actually really good writer. He had like the different levels of losing, and it felt like it was like one of those, you know, top three or four kind of levels where it just took all the wind out of your sails. It kind of felt like the team was coming on, you know?
Yeah, because they were doing the things that they don't normally do well. Well, I mean, they were starting to hit their shots, and role players were playing well, and you saw, like, a full team coming together. You know, Drew wasn't playing well, but pretty much everybody else was. And, then all of a sudden that happened. And it's just it's what always happens. The team gives you a little bit of hope, and then something like that is bound to happen. That said, you know, there's no reason. I love Donovan Mitchell. He's a good player, but there's no reason they needed to make him look like Dwayne Wade in his prime. There were still plenty of chances even after AD went out when they could have taken control of that game. So, you know, no excuses there. The Minnesota game to me was more frustrating just because you've kind of seen this coming on with Davis all season. It's, you know, honestly, AD's flopping more than he has in a long time. He is getting more superstar calls, but with that comes this kind of entitlement that if he doesn't get every call, he starts chirping at the refs more than he ever has. He starts getting frustrated, you know, and you just saw it building throughout that game. And eventually he blew. And even though he was still fuming, Gentry decided to leave him in. And on the next play, he gets another tech, and it just took the air out of the building. The team didn't respond very well. That, to me, that one was a little bit more frustrating because it just, it was a game that you watched the first couple minutes of that game, and Minnesota was on the second night of a back-to-back in which all their guys had played like 40 minutes the night before, and they were sleepwalking through that first quarter, and the Pelicans came out. I think it started like 10-2. They had a chance to just step on their throats. Minnesota didn't want to be there that night, and they just let them in, and then they started whining, and it just – That game frustrated me a lot more.
Yeah, the Wolves are just, it's a weird team. They make so many mistakes. They look like complete and utter idiots. Yet they still manage to just score like crazy at times. They're just a weird team. Is that at all what you ever expected a Thibodeau coach team to look like, ever?
No, and that just shows me more and more that, like, the credit or blame that we give coaches is stupid at times. Like, the fact that we think that coaches have this, you know, remote and they just tell players what to do and control them, you know, is ridiculous. Players are who they are. They are their habits. They are their mistakes. And a coach can't just tell a player what to do and all of a sudden they start doing it. So I think that is one of the greatest examples that we give coaches way too much credit or blame for how a team plays and performs.
Yeah. I mean, Doc Rivers at one point being considered a great NBA coach because he had Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. And Rondo, when Rondo was phenomenal. It's kind
of
silly.
No, I mean, I mean, Steve Kerr was on Simmons's podcast this past week, and he's, you know, Simmons asked him, you ever think about if you would have taken the New York job, what would have happened? And Steve Kerr said he would probably be back in TV right now because a coach is his players, and you could do minor things here or there to tweak, but you are your roster, so even he knows that, you know, he's probably going to end up winning 5 or 6 championships as a coach and people will remember him as a great one. But if he would have went to a team with the wrong players and wrong culture, he would have been out of a job within 3 years. So coaches don't have the impact people seem to think that they do.
Yeah. So let's talk about your favorite player on the team, Mr. Rubio. But I just say Rubio. I meant Rondo. Wow. I'm looking at the Utah Jazz game. That must have been what it was. Mr. Rondo. So this has probably been his best week in a Pelican uniform. It's not too surprising because he's came back from injury and he's working his way into things. Grade Rajon Rondo's week.
I would give him it's between a B and a B+.
Okay.
I would give him a B. I won't go the B+ just because defensively, I think he gets a bad rep that he doesn't try. I haven't seen a minute where he just lopes on that end. In fact, I've seen way more minutes in which Tony Allen, the guy who everybody praises as this all-world defender, in which Tony Allen loafs on that end than Rondo. But Rondo, I guess I've always realized he was skinny. I never realized like how easily he gets pushed around by other guards. Who guards are getting bigger and bigger in this league every day. And there's lineups when they'll put Jameer and Rondo on the court, and like those guys are average size guards back in the day. And even Rondo would be a big guard, 15 years ago. They look like little like mini mouses out there. Like they just both get pushed around and shot over or gone through so easily now. So I really liked Rondo's offense this week, and I think he talks a lot and he tries on the defensive end, but he just gets walked through like he's a kid on that end sometimes. So that's why I'm going B, but overall I really liked his week.
Yeah. I thought he played pretty well both in the Minnesota and the Utah games, but against Portland, I found I was enjoying every second because basically he would get the ball and he would go hard right at Lillard every time he could, and he made Lillard have to defend him, and he, like, Rondo is not a super skilled offensive player as far as shooting. You know he's either going to try to get all the way to the rim and lay it up off the glass on some pretty wonky, weird angles and stuff, or he's going to be a standstill spot-up shooter. And he made Lillard just look silly out there over and over again. This isn't a guy who's gonna—he's not like gonna hit you with four crossovers and get you spun around. He's just straight line driving, and Lillard could not handle it. So it was pretty fun watching that happen over and over again. Because, you know, I hate Portland. Screw those guys.
Yeah, and you want your number one stat of the week, the one that would have knocked Ryan over if he was told it before the game. Dante Cunningham grabs 12 rebounds.
I know.
How shocked were you by that?
So I watched the game and I thought to myself, he had three pretty nice traffic rebounds where he came flying in from the wing and dragged a rebound away from, you know, the other team, and I felt pretty good about those. But then, yeah, Myers at some point said, "Oh, he's already got 10 rebounds," and I was like, okay. I've officially entered Bizarro Land. Like, it was weird seeing Cousins blocking off people and not even going for the rebound, and the Pelicans players actually getting in there and picking them up. It was refreshing. Like, yeah. When's the last time you see Drew Holiday get 5 rebounds?
Yeah, no, I mean, Nelson, all the guards were helping. I mean, That's why I think this was my favorite game of the year, even though AD was out. Was it was a game where they played like a team, where they played hungry, where they knew they had to help each other, and it wasn't just them relying on the big guys and standing around and watching. I really enjoyed this game. I thought they all played within themselves. The guards attacked. I mean, the guy that we rarely talk about on this podcast, but is having a tremendously efficient season, and I can't imagine he keeps it up, but I hope he does. But Etuan Moore, you're talking about a guy who's shooting nearly 60% from two and over 42% from three, just seems to be making everything and plays under control and does his role. There was just a lot of guys on that team that stepped up, and Boogie was setting off ball picks for guys like Ian Clark to get open, and, you know, drawing up plays for Darius Miller. It felt like they knew they would have to, you know, coaches and players would have to put all their focus into every play, every possession, to have any chance at a win. And they actually did it. And, I don't know. It was really a lot of fun to watch, because that felt like a team game, not just a win-with-talent game.
Right, and I think I have been starting to take an official stupid pass counter for Boogie in every game, where, you know, usually he has, like, 5 passes that are just, there's just no reason to even try to make them, yet he tries to. And I'm not, like, saying he's threading the needle to a cutter, just like, I'm going to throw this ball at an angle that makes it pass by two defenders because I don't have anything to do right now. I can't make a move, so I'm just going to toss a stupid pass. And every game, there's usually 4 or 5 of them. I had none. There was one that almost came close, but there was a good reason for him to try to do it. So it was great. Everything about the game was really nice, and the players, like, Rondo was aggressive. Holiday was taking his turn being aggressive. Moore was, like, some of the pushes. Like I haven't seen this team, despite every single coach we've ever had in the past, you know, 8 years saying, "Well, I want to play with pace." Like, this team is actually pushing it. Like, with Moore out there and Rondo out there, they've been actually pushing it and trying to take some quick shots that are open along the perimeter, and it's been kind of refreshing. And it wasn't just the Portland game. Rondo was actually having a significant impact on the push, so that's good. Like it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. The other guy that got to give some props to, even though he only played 14 minutes, he looked like he was going to pass out almost every minute he was on the court, but Ashik goes out there He gives you 7 rebounds in 14 minutes, played smart D, made Portland take mid-range jumpers, and, you know, boxed out and generally did his job. And I think that's the thing that I'm most surprised by. I wouldn't have believed if you told me that, you know, before the season started, that by the beginning of December, you know, Omer would be able to be used in the rotation and would be a, you know, a solid supporting guy that was able to give you a couple quality minutes. So that was another pleasant surprise in that game.
I mean, the very fact that Oshik is playing at all is, I honestly thought his career was over. I didn't think we would even see like a showcase. I didn't think we would see him come in and play for, you know, 4 games. And I honestly thought his career was just completely done this offseason. So the fact that he's out there, and like, he's not great, but he's no worse than the Omer Oshik we watched before. He does exactly what we want him to. He sets nice screens. He tries to stay out of the way as much as possible on offense. And if he does happen to catch the ball on offense, he'll do some sort of horrible flip shot, which probably won't go in. And then he'll end possessions. He'll grab rebounds left and right, and he'll fight battle people down there. It's what they signed him to do. And the fact he can still do it at a decent level is pretty shocking to me.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. The other part of me, though, was a little sad. Like, if Diallo can't get minutes now on the second night of a back-to-back when Anthony Davis is out, I don't know if he's ever going to get minutes. And I'm not saying he deserves them or he could help.
Right, that's what I was about to ask. Is, has anything you've seen him do this season made you think, wow, he deserves? So I understand there's the whole development thing, and Pop would be having him in there for some certain amount of time every single day just because he wants to develop him and see what he can do. But if you're trying to win every single game, has he shown you anything that makes you think he deserves to get minutes?
No, but that's what sucks about being a Pelicans fan as opposed to somebody else. Like, tonight, San Antonio went into Oklahoma State, and Brandon Paul or whoever, got 33 minutes. Bertrand's got 29. They're giving this kid Forbes 33 minutes. And, like, Forbes was terrible. Paul was terrible. They went a combined 4-for-19, but they gave them minutes, and they're continuing to develop them. And it's just like, if you're going to be able to develop guys like that, that you need to at least try. On the other hand, you might be able to say, though, well, Dell doesn't need to draft those guys or Gentry develop them, because Dell will just find them in Germany like he did with Darius Miller, or you know, find them other places like he did with any other handful of kind of gems. So maybe we don't have to develop our young guys, but it's just it's something that I would have loved to seen Diallo get minutes, but you're right. He does have to earn them, and he hasn't done anything so far to say that he could help this team win more than Omer Oshik, which is just, again, that's crazy. If you would have put a poll up at the beginning of October, you know, who would be playing more minutes in December and helping the team win more? Like, I just can't believe Omer's here and Diallo really can't give me anything, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Your boy CJ, was it Pelicans defense that made him shoot 8 of 22 for 17 points, or was it just an off night? Because that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think it was more Lillard, honestly. I think it feels like CJ's forcing a lot more because Lillard is becoming far more ball dominant and shot dominant these past couple of weeks from what I've seen. It's like the Blazers have started to lose or get a little rocky, and Lillard's response is to shoot more rather than run the offense. And then that kind of has a trickle-down effect of McCollum. You know, when he gets the ball, he doesn't know if he's going to see it again, so he was just forcing, you know, a lot of things. But I think you combine that with them being an off night too. But I think, you know, I think Lillard's a lot more dangerous where when he kind of gets his shots within the system for the first 44 minutes of the game, and then, yeah, he hoists up those crazy threes and jumpers at the end of the game and winning time. But it felt like this entire game, he just got into hero mode, and they really didn't run any kind of offense from what I saw.
Yeah. Although McCollum did, like, start off the game getting some... He took, like, three really nice mid-range jumpers that just rimmed out. But after that, I don't remember him getting a whole lot of open looks. So I feel like the Pelicans did a pretty good job with both McCollum and Lillard. And this is the second time this year we've seen... Like, I know Lillard scored 29 and McCollum scored, you know, 17, but it took them 47 shots to get to those numbers. So that's pretty poor. So I almost feel like the Pelicans might have the ability to make those two guys work more than a lot of other teams do with their perimeter defense. So I'm really hopeful that we will get to see them play Portland again with maybe Anthony Davis in actually on the court. That'd be cool. I'd like that. Would you like to see Anthony Davis play against Portland?
That's just crazy talk. I think there's some guards. I really feel like Pelicans fight through picks well, especially now with Rondo back, when they're on ball screens. I think the difficulty this team has, other than Drew is great at trailing, but I feel like the difficulty this team really has is, with off-ball screens and communication and when to switch and not. And luckily, Portland didn't do that a lot. Their two guys just like to pound the ball. A lot of what you see is right in front of you as opposed to kind of misdirection. And I think they do well with that. I think they did well against Booker in Phoenix. But you take a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who just relentlessly attacks the basket, and they were just having far too much trouble with that. So I think there's some guards that they'll be able to play well against, but there's still others that are going to give them problems.
Right.
Or including a guy named Klay Thompson that's coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, I saw you say that on Twitter, and I was like, you stole my thunder, because actually it feels like the Pelicans have been able to slow Curry here and there. Of course, Curry, you can't slow Curry completely because he's just the kind of player he is, but at times they can get him a little off his game and give the ball to other people. And I've never experienced them making Klay Thompson not be able to get the exact same shots he wants whenever he wants to.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the Pelicans don't have a problem with the guy they could see with the ball. It's the guy who doesn't have it yet that gives them problems. They don't have the awareness with the off-the-ball defense. So those are the guys I'm more worried about. And then also, Klay has been fantastic on the other side of the court against the Pelicans as well. He, I think Curry scares me more. But I think overall, as far as playing an entire game, I think Klay Thompson hurts the Pelicans more than he does most teams just because of their weakness.
Right. And we'll talk a little bit more about Golden State coming up here, though, because that's tomorrow. Anything else about any of these games? You mentioned this. Let me just get your take about it then. You said that they could have gotten Donovan Mitchell under, at least under control a little bit more. So what would you have done?
I would have trapped him. Okay. Right off the screen. I mean, I know that would have been an issue because essentially you would have had to blitz him with Boogie, and the Pelicans were playing small, which meant you had no rim defense, but Boogie wasn't presenting any defense at the rim either. He's terrible in space. We all know that. So I would have just blitzed him, gotten the ball out of his hands, or went under, and I know he was shooting well that night, but I'd much rather him beat me that way than continuing to attack. But given who else they had on the court, I would have blitzed him, and if that meant that they would have swung the ball and eventually Derek Favors would have been posting up Drew Holiday, I would have taken my chances with that over what was going on. So that's I would have just blitzed the pick and roll.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, other than Mitchell and really Burks, who came in and kept the pressure going, there wasn't a real threat on their team. Ingles is a nice spot-up shooter, and he had some savvy drives and dishes, but, Rubio wasn't doing jack. And Jerebko doesn't scare anybody, so there's just such a simple team. Like I don't.
Yeah, and if Cephalosha would have buried me with wide open threes, like fine, like I'm fine with that. I'm not gonna let the rookie get the crowd all pumped up and go nuts on me, in that game when they run the same thing over and over again. And so yeah, that one was frustrating. That said, if AD is there, you know he doesn't get into the lane as easy, but that is what it is. But then again, I mean, that's another game where AD went out and the Pelicans were up 4. You know, they were up 19 in that game. AD could have got injured with the Pelicans up 15, and then it's easier to hold on. Like, it's just over and over again. This team just lacks the killer instincts. And again, that's what impressed me about the Portland game. Is the lead got up to 16, it got up to 20, and then Portland would start doing some things, and then it got right back up to 16 or 18 before, you know, of course, the Pelicans tried to take the air out of the ball, and Portland made some crazy shots to make it look closer than it was at the end. But
I cannot stand it when they started doing that. It just made me sad. In fact, nothing made me cheer louder was when Drew just, even though they were trying to be supposed to be taking the air out of the ball, he got it on a breakaway, and he just went up and dunked it. Like thanks. I understand the idea is, oh, take it out and dribble and burn another 10 seconds. Like, no, take the 2 points.
Yeah.
The whole purpose of a possession is to give you points. It's not to get a crappy shot and then hope you can defend. So.
Couldn't agree more. So before we move on to the next game, there's one more thing with this whole AD situation, and again, it sucks doing a whole podcast 12 hours before we get the news, but it is what it is. If it does come back, what we suspect, somewhere between a month and 2 months, we know the situation. Obviously we have our own personal opinions, but to me, there's two paths then. It's, you know, I got this pick, and there's probably more big men on the market than any other position. I mean, you could just start naming them. I think the last time I started counting, I got up to almost 10 guys who are either quasi-starter or starting bigs in the NBA who are, you know, on the market and you could get for that first-round pick. So do you just go out and do that and plug the hole in the short term and then tell yourselves, and then we'll have three good big guys when AD comes back? Or do you say, no, with AD gone, that could be its potential top 5, top 10 pick, and there's no way I could even risk giving that up now? Which path do you find yourself to be more likely in? And then knowing who are actually the decision makers in this franchise, what do you think they will look into?
So right off the bat, I am sitting on that pick all the way to the trade deadline, if I'm in charge. And if the team holds it together well enough, fine, then I'll go see about getting a player and bringing them in, and seeing if I can make a push for the playoffs and make something happen. But there is no way in hell I am trading it early to try to paper over Anthony Davis, because you know what? Nothing you are getting for that pick is giving you Anthony Davis level production. So not even 90% of Anthony Davis level production. So you just gotta, it is what it is. It's an injury. You keep the pick. You gotta start restocking the cupboard at some point anyways. That's my take. They'll trade it. I don't know if they're going to feel super pressure to trade it like right off the bat, but December 15th is when all those players who signed nice contracts in the off season become available to be traded. It wouldn't shock me if we saw something happen right around then. They're going to be opportunistic and take whatever the best deal is available as soon as they can, I think.
Yeah, I mean, part of me says if you're going to trade it anyway, trade it where you could get the most games out of the player.
So what I'm saying is I wait until the trade deadline to see if they hold it together. And and then that's the only way I will trade it is if I think I'm actually going to get myself into a position where I can make some noise in the playoffs. That's the only time I would trade it. I would, if I had this team right now in my hands, I would prefer not to trade it at all. I have no idea what Boogie's doing this summer. So if Boogie goes somewhere else and I've traded that thing, I've just double screwed myself. So just hold on to it.
And if Boogie goes somewhere else and you have the 12th pick, you're all of a sudden fine? I mean, either
way. No, you're not fine, but at least you have the pick at the trade at the draft and you can do something there.
But you wouldn't know Boogie's gone by then anyway. So you gave that side, and I would be very hesitant to give a pick. Let me present the other argument. You know, as this was happening, after the Jazz game, I pretty much assumed at that point, because of the region of where it was, that you're looking at a month or two injury, and then at that point, making the playoffs would just be a long shot. And then I said, okay, well, what if you went the other way and then started tanking? I look around the league, and even if AD is out for a month or two, this team won't be good, but they'll win games. You start to look at the bottom. I mean, they're not going to be as bad. I mean, for me, it would even be hard with Blake out 2 months about the same time. I don't even know how they catch the Clippers. So you're talking about, I would say that if you really somehow, if you lost AD for 2 months, even though I would consider playoffs a long shot, I also think getting a top eight pick would be an incredible, I think you're looking at, even if other things start to go bad, you're looking at the 10th or 11th pick most likely. Which, you know, you could get a Donovan Mitchell. I'm fully aware of all the things that you could get with that pick, you know, but I also am fully aware of what the normal expectancy is for that pick, and then also what you could likely trade that pick for, which isn't much. So I don't know, you know, you throw top three protection on that pick, and I still think it would be hard for you to get anything better than the eighth or ninth pick. So now I'm sitting there. I see the way that this team played against Portland without AD. And yeah, you're right. I'm not going to go get 80% of AD on the market. But my argument is I don't need 80% of AD. I'm going to play the way I played against Portland with moving the ball, team effort, yada, yada, yada. And now all I want and all I need is a better version of Oshik, and then consistently get close to what Dante gave me the other night, you know, as far as the rebounds. So that would be my argument for going the other way, is I would be able to keep myself in the playoff picture, which I do think is going to matter when it comes to re-signing Boogie. And if I'm going to head that path, then I'm trading the pick. My other consideration would be I go the complete opposite way, and then I look to move Boogie and then just absolutely give. I guess it's very hard for me to play the neither, to where I don't move Boogie and just give up on that because I know he's going to leave after this miserable season. And then I also don't give myself the best chance to stay afloat with AD out. I don't get doing neither. To me, you got to do one or the other. And knowing the position these guys are in, obviously one path makes a lot more sense to their job and job security than the other.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, though. And, you know, I know it's not an open and shut case, but what do you think if you trade Cousins, like, you know, a month from now for the best deal possible, and Davis isn't coming back until, say, March, what is the likelihood you think you're going to get a trade demand from Davis in the offseason as a result of that?
I think it would a lot of factors. I think with that, First of all, I don't think Dell ever sells on Boogie. I think he would have to be fired first. And if he's fired, Gentry's fired also. And then the interim or whoever else comes in and trades Boogie. But I think a lot would depend on, okay, who's the new leadership? Who's the new coach? If this team goes out and makes John Calipari the president and coach, which people could laugh at, but they had the opportunity to do a couple years ago, no matter what Calipari says, and maybe, you know, they see that not doing that was a mistake, and they go ahead and do it after the Saints win the Super Bowl and cash is flowing in anyway.
nice drop of that in there.
Yeah, everybody's excited. But I don't think you could say unequivocally that it would be this or be that. I mean, you go get John Calipari or, you know, you bring in David Fizdale and whoever else. And then next year, you know, Davis really bonds with that guy. Or maybe you trade Boogie and you bring in Jabari Parker, who's from Chicago, and those guys really find a bond. And, you know, I think that AD will want to be somewhere where he wins and believes in the leadership more than just, like, he's not going to stay with Boogie, his friend, if everything else is terrible. So people thinking that's the one and only factor, I think, are a little naive. So a lot else would go into it, but to me, it's at least an option. The one that I think makes the least amount of sense, again, if they come out and say AD's out for 6 weeks, the ones that make the least amount of sense to me is just sitting on your hands and waiting and hoping that everything's going to be okay. That would be me. Me, I would, you know, I'm not on the Boogie train. That said, if he played every single game the way he played last night, and I'm not talking about the numbers. I don't care about the numbers. My favorite play of the game was, the Pelicans were up, I think, 12. Portland was going on a little run to get back in. Pelicans call timeout. They come out of the timeout, and the play they run is a play in which they pass it to Boogie in the high post. It's dribble handoff, and then Boogie goes and sets two off-ball screens for other guys, which leads to Clark getting the ball on the move on the wing, and then Clark drives in for a layup. Like, they drew an out-of-timeout play in which Boogie was the decoy and sent picks for freaking Ian Clark, who I don't think had even been in the game until that point, to get a drive to the basket and a layup. Like, to me, that's a team. That's a team, you know, the guy who gets the shot is what the defense dictates to you, not just, well, we give this guy shots because he has to get 25 a game and whatever. So, that, I mean, if Boogie plays like he did last night and the team plays as a team like they did last night, I don't know if they need much to stay afloat, but they need something.
So Cousins got 28 points. I mean, not 20 points, 28 shots last night. I was going to just bring this up, and I'm not trying to in any way say that having Cousins and Davis is a bad thing. But do you feel that Cousins may feel less pressure to try to get his during the minutes that Davis isn't on the floor if he knows Davis isn't going to be on the floor?
Yeah, one of my followers tweeted that at me last night, and I had honestly never thought of that, but it does make a lot of sense. He knows he's going to get his shots within the flow of the offense, which I think a lot of his shots were within the flow. I don't think he forced a ton yesterday. So now he doesn't have to rush, you know, doesn't have to do it when Davis is out and isn't forcing. And I think the guards are the same way. I think the guards are far too passive when AD and Cousins are both in, and they were just attacking, you know, nonstop last night, which all of this is what the coaches have been telling these guys to do. It's just being told to do something and then actually doing it. It's two totally different things. So I think there's a chance. And if you bring in another mid to low usage guy, but gives you some of the things you need, I think this team has the ability to stay afloat. I think asking them to stay afloat with the roster they have now And then if AD's out 6 weeks, you know another guy is going to go down in that time, not just because they're the Pelicans, but because, you know, of over any 6 week stretch, it's very rare that an NBA team does not suffer at least a minor injury in there. So I think, you know, if you still have hope that AD is going to play this season and you want to stay afloat, it's hard for me to see why, you don't move that pick or go the opposite way, like you said earlier, and go for the trade Holiday route and maybe even trade Cousins. It's got to be one or the other. I don't see just standing pat as a legitimate option.
Yeah. I'd be calling Sacramento and see if they went anything for Jrue Holiday for George Hill and one of their bigs.
So let's say they do, you know, want to go find a big to stay in it short term, but then also look long term. Let me give you the guy and you tell me just as a player, scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being terrible, 10 being good, as far as their fit on this team with AD off of it.
Okay.
All right. So I guess we'll start in the East, but let's go. Let's say the Magic are falling out now, and you could get Vucevic.
Four.
Okay. Timofey Mozgov.
I have not seen him play this year, so I honestly cannot. I haven't watched. That is actually, I think, the only team I have not watched a minute of any game they've played is the Brooklyn Nets.
They're actually pretty fun to watch.
Are they? Yeah, I've caught most of the other teams here and there, at least for like a couple quarters, but not the Nets. So I don't know what Mozgov is at the moment. If he's what he was with the Lakers last year, I don't think he's any better than Oshik.
So. Yeah, no, I would agree. Deadman, unfortunately, is injured. Robin Lopez.
I think he's a 7.
What about, now that he's healthy again, Nikola Mirotic?
I actually kind of like him now more, which is weird because I was arguing against him before.
But you'd start him now next to Cunningham. Now that you'd
play. Yeah, I kind of like him. I mean, he's definitely like a much better Dante Cunningham. And I know there's a lot of people who in Chicago have given up on the guy, but he's an instigator, and I kind of like instigator. I want an instigator on my team, someone who's gonna just like do all the crap to the other team to like get them going, rather than it always just being my team being prodded and poked and being nasty to. So I'd give him a nice shining 9.
Okay, this is a crazy one, but DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I still think he's probably like a 3 or a 4 though. And here's the number one reason why. I don't think he fits particularly well next to Boogie. He's okay, but I think he's just, if all three of the bigs are there, that is not a good scenario. Like, I don't think you're going to make anybody happy unless you just make one of them really sad.
Yeah. Who would interest you more from the Lakers? Again, we'll throw away contracts and all that for right now, but Brook Lopez or Julius Randle?
I would go Randle, actually.
So Randle, is that a guy, would you give up, say, a Ginza and a first-round pick for Randle?
I think that's a bit much. I don't know if I would give it up for either of those players. But, you know, I mean, if I had to come up with some sort of deal and the centerpiece was getting back a big man from the Lakers, and Randle would be the one I would go after. I feel like if you put him in the right situation and you showed, you know, hey, you're our dude, you might actually be able to get a decent game out of him every other game.
Tyson Chandler.
I don't know. I don't think he can play much more than like 20 minutes a game and really be that useful. but that makes it good later on, so I'd probably put him like at a 6.
Greg Monroe?
What is his salary at now? Like, is he still at like $17 million or something?
No, he's around 13.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Greg Monroe, I don't know. I think he's completely unmotivated now, so judging anything that he's doing down in Phoenix at the moment is kind of silly. I would probably put him at around a 5.
Okay, Alex Len?
A 3.
Okay.
I don't think he's worth a damn anything.
Zach Randolph.
You
could go get him now. He gets either come off the bench or start next to Cousins, and then when AD comes back, he's your bench bruiser. He's reunited with Tony Allen.
Yeah, I think I would actually probably give him about a 6. Maybe a 5. Somewhere around there.
Okay.
He's not very good anymore. That's the problem, is he's pretty sharply declining. And is it 2 guaranteed years on his contract?
Yeah, this year and next. It declines a little next. But, yeah, you got to pay him a little over $10 million next year.
Yeah. I don't know. Contract would make me rethink really long and hard.
Yeah, no.
He's not shooting very well right now.
Yeah, we're just throwing that out for now. And then Dallas and a guy we put behind. But let's go with Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor. Either of those guys be of any interest to you?
Both of them are of an interest to me. I am not putting a first-round pick into any deal for them, though.
Yeah.
I'd give up a couple seconds, but like I just don't... Those two guys are completely unwanted by their own teams. So, and, you know, that tells you something right there. And then, you know, you bring them in, you try to revitalize them and have them play on your side. They're not perfect fits for no matter what we're trying to do. And, you know, I wouldn't be putting much out there for him.
Yeah, that. And then the other thing to get excited about is if AD's out for a while, by the end of the week, we'll have another hardship exception, baby.
Yay.
So we could use that. We could go get a
Cliff Alexander.
Yeah. Bring Cliff Alexander. We could you could go get Derek Williams maybe to play some 4. I don't know. I think you need rebounding and rim protect. You could go get Jared Sullinger.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he's somewhere.
Yeah, go get your boy. Yeah, those are
some. I wanted to draft him.
Oh, I know you did. Those are
I wanted the AD Sullinger front court.
I know. Dreams die hard. yeah, those are some of the options for you. Maybe you could even go get Udonis Haslam off of the Heat. I don't know. But the options, I mean, the big man market is the market that has the most players probably on it that are, you know, I mean, you could probably even go get Dwight Howard if you really wanted him bad.
I was actually waiting for you to bring him up so I could say -7.
Yeah, I couldn't do that, but I'm sure Charlotte would listen if you were asking about him.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. From what I understand, there were Atlanta players who were actually like calling each other up and cheering when he was traded away.
Yeah,
that's how much he's disliked.
Yeah, he's not a likable fella. So, all right. It'd be interesting to see. And again, I have no clue. All we could do is speculate. I think the most likely thing we're going to get tomorrow is that he's going to be week to week while he tries to rehabilitate, and then we'll go from there. And it's just going to be this frustrating period of not knowing when AD's coming back. Part of me would rather just get an answer now, even if the answer was bad. But I don't know if we're going to get a definitive one tomorrow.
Right. Okay. Shall we talk about what's coming up for the AD-less team?
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to have actually 4 games before the next pod. So Monday, they get to play Golden State. Wednesday, it's Denver. And Friday, it's Sacramento. All of those games are at home. And then Sunday, it's Philadelphia, also at home. So they're at home for the whole week.
Yep.
And
Could have been a great time to go on a little run here, but of course.
Yep. So Golden State, Denver, Sacramento, Philly, which of those teams would you like to talk about the most?
I when I am flipping through channels and Philadelphia's on, I like to watch Philadelphia. You could sue me, you could call me, create whatever. I enjoy watching that team. I don't see all the love for, but I mean, I don't get the fascination with Ben Simmons. I think it's because he's different and people get uber excited about something different, like a player that they can't compare to other players or doesn't play exactly like other players. I am not as scared of him or overwhelmed by him as others, but Embiid to me is just, he has the skill level, not necessarily the production or whatever, but just the pure skill level. He has more skill than any big man I've ever seen. Ever. And it's not their fault. Akeem was limited. I mean, big men didn't shoot jumpers and three-pointers when Akeem was in the league, so to fault him for not having that shot is kind of stupid. But when I'm just talking about, like, if you think about NBA 2K or any of the games and, like, all the different categories they have for a player, like, there has never been one, in my opinion, who had the potential to fill up as many of those categories as high as Embiid could fill them up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. He's 7 foot. He is Shaq if Shaq had skill and, like, just size wise. Like, that's what the freakiest part about it. Like, and that denigrates Shaq more than I mean it to. Shaq had skill. He just didn't have any sort of outside of the paint skill that really mattered. And Embiid has some of those. So I don't know. He's bizarrely overpowering, and you see him come in there, and it's kind of like you talking about Rondo. Like, you're used to seeing these big centers playing in the NBA, and they're all about the same size, and then you watch one of these, and Joel Embiid is there, and you realize, now that is a huge man. Like, holy cow. Simmons reminds me of Grant Hill for some reason. I've watched 2 full Philly games.
Yeah.
It's just something about him reminded me of Grant Hill.
Do you ever remember Grant Hill having, like, spectacular passes, though? Because to me, Grant Hill got his assists, but they were just kind of, like, in the flow and solid. I don't remember him having kind of, like, the spectacular part of his game, as far as the passing part of it.
No, he didn't have a lot of that. He was really good at getting into the paint and then dropping the ball off behind him to someone trailing in, which those are kind of cool for, like, nifty finishes around the rim. But you're right, most of his were of the drive and kick nature, drive and dump off to the big man for a dunk kind of thing. And Simmons does have flair. A lot more flair than, but then I don't think Grant Hill ever averaged more than, like, say, 5 assists per game, and Simmons is up above that number now, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure Grant did. I mean, he was a triple-double threat every night. He had to back in his prime.
Yeah. You looked that up. I
would guess 7.8 was his, let's see, where are we at? 6.9, 7.3, 6.
Really?
In his prime, yeah.
I didn't remember him being that effective.
He was a triple. I mean, he was one of those.
I'll have to admit, though, I didn't watch a ton of Detroit basketball back when he was super. Mostly I caught it because I was watching Chicago games because I lived outside of Chicago. And then when they played against Detroit, it was kind of a bigger thing, even though Detroit at that time sucked. So I also remember him doing stuff like playing with Lindsey Hunter, who was just awful. Anyways.
Yeah.
J.J. Redick, $20 million man.
$20 million podcast, and he still has to do podcasting on the side just to pay the bills.
Do you think he's worth every penny of it for this team?
I think he will be long-term, yeah, and they needed the money anyway to spend to get to the floor. But I think, you know, you always hear those stories about the players realizing that, you know, what it takes to be a professional, and they talk about early in their careers, they had this guy to show them or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think 10 years from now, Simmons or Embiid or Saric will be on a podcast and say, yeah, you know, I didn't really know how to be a professional until I saw J.J. Redick come to work or yada, yada, yada. So I think, you know, this year is still just kind of a building year, but I think he'll have that kind of effect moving forward. So I think he's worth every penny to the team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just they've got they honestly have a nicely constructed team right now.
They do, like they have, but once you pull out like one Jenga piece, it slowly starts to fall apart. I mean, their bench and what, you know, the different units that they try to mix and match, like they really haven't found much yet. And if you pull out, you know, one guy gets into foul trouble. Or even, you know, that guy doesn't play that particular game because they're still, you know, resting. And, I mean, this could very easily be a game in which you don't see Embiid because on December 9th, the day before, they're at Cleveland. And then they have the Pelicans the next night. And then two nights later, they're at Minnesota. I would say that there's a high probability that Embiid doesn't play in the Pelicans game, because I'm sure they'll try to play him and go all out for that Cleveland game. Right. And if you're playing him in that Pelicans game, it's the second of a back-to-back, and then he's got to play again against Minnesota. I would bet that they don't play him for the Pelicans game,
right.
Which to me totally changes. I mean, I think if Embiid plays, even if it's at New Orleans, you would have to consider Philadelphia the favorite, but without him, I think it swings the other way.
Yeah, so far I've been wrong about the team because I didn't think that they would have a defense good enough to do anything. I really expected them to have a really, really crappy defense, and they've been a little bit better than league average so far. So
yeah. Yeah,
just what I know.
They got a decent guy in the perimeter in Covington, and then I mean they could also play longer because when you've got Ben Simmons as your de facto point guard, that means you're bound to be longer on the court because there's no reason for you to play a traditional smaller point guard anymore. So they've just got a bunch of length, and Embiid swallows everything up when he's in. But again, I don't expect Embiid to play that game, and that could kind of be a game changer.
Yeah, and even the point guard that they do play some is scrappy as all hell, and TJ McConnell. Like, that guy's not giving up a second on the floor. He's going to try as hard as he can every moment he's there.
So, that's right. That's the scrappy white point guard gene, baby.
All right, so what's the other team you'd like to talk about? I don't think we need to talk about Denver because we've already seen Denver a couple times this year. Jokic is going to be missing some games, though, so Jokic won't be there. But Sacramento or Golden State, would you like to talk about?
I'll just talk about Golden State. So Golden State's going to be on the second night of a back-to-back tomorrow. You know the Pelicans will be without Davis. Give me your order 1 through 4. If you got to pick who the Warriors would not play tomorrow night, and I say they're only going to sit one guy, who's the one guy you're sitting?
You're
the Pelicans, and you want your best chance to win.
Draymond Green.
You would sit Green, so you'd let their perimeter players stay, and you would just hope to dominate inside.
Yeah, and it's even more than that. Like, let's be honest, our one super hope tomorrow night is, like, our perimeter guys aren't going to outscore their perimeter guys. So our big has to do something. And Draymond Green makes Boogie Cousins by the third quarter just be in the worst possible headspace imaginable for him. So, if you could have Draymond Green not on the floor, then you have a chance that Boogie Cousins won't, like, completely lose it. I mean, it would be nice if Boogie came out and, you know, Draymond and got under his skin and it turned him into an actually efficient, good scoring player, but that's not what Boogie does.
Hey, we saw Boogie control himself with Myers Leonard, another guy who he's feuded with for a while.
Yeah.
He stayed under control in some crazy situations. What about if I told you that two guys, you could sit two guys for the Warriors, which two do you choose?
It's really tough, but I'm keeping Durant no matter what. He can come in and play.
you're allowing Durant to play.
Yeah.
That's,
so
isn't that crazy? Like, doesn't that tell you how talented this Warriors team is? When I told you you could take two players off and you would leave Durant on because you're more scared of two other guys.
Yes. Yeah, I would probably still take Curry off. Okay. Just because Curry has, like, so let's be 100% honest. The last time the Pelicans played the Warriors, and the Pelicans got a nice lead in the beginning, they're beating up on the Golden State Warriors, and then the Warriors' defense started cranking in, but the Warriors were still not really getting it close. Like, the entire time I was like, yeah, you know what, it's a 12-point game right now. That's just, you know, the inevitable 2 minutes Steph Curry went nuts moment, and this game is tied. You just felt that every time you play Golden State, you just think Steph Curry at some point in this game is going to go nuts for 2 minutes, and either he's going to crack the game open or he's going to tie it. And he has more of those moments than anybody else on this team. So Curry is the one I would drop. Klay, we have the hardest time defending, so it's. I just feel like he's like a really nice baseline layer. Like, he'll make sure that the game never gets out of reach for them, or that he's continuing to pile it on us. But he's not going to be the generator of spurts against us. That'll be Curry. So,
the generator of spurts. It sounds like somebody on one of the Game of Thrones islands.
yeah. Or a porn parody of it.
Son of Abetheus, generator of spurts. I would probably go Curry and Klay. I would just completely cut off their massive advantage and what makes them different and make them beat me a totally different way. That said, I can make the argument for any two men. Like, I can even make the argument for Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, just because I think those are their only two rim protectors. And, you know, I think those are the guys that keep the Pelicans guards from being as aggressive as I'd like. So, you know, the crazy part is that you take one guy off that team, they're the favorite in this game, no doubt, even though they're on the second night of a back-to-back on the road. You take two guys off that team, they're still the favorite. That team's just insane, and any win against them should be considered, you know, a blessing, and you're happy you got them on an off night. And I just hope that, you know, the Pelicans get lucky and get to steal a win in that game. That would be a total bonus.
I mean, they've already lost six games this season, so they can be beaten.
Yeah, yeah, then they don't feel like showing up. And we saw it in one game. I mean, the second night of a back-to-back after they played the Pelicans, they went to Memphis and completely crap the bed, and they don't care if they lose. So, yeah, maybe they'll just throw us a little bone for some pity and sympathy. So that's got to be the hope. Maybe they sit all four guys tomorrow. Maybe they just completely take the day off, go to the casino, and have fun.
Well, that's what San Antonio did tonight. Maybe, you know, Kerr will take a page out of the pop book.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm hoping for. But good God, like, can we just get to that Golden State Houston series already? I'm ready for it. And the way that injuries are popping up in the NBA, I just don't want any more to occur. I want those two teams to just go at it. I'm excited for that. But yeah, so that's it. The Denver game I would have chalked up as a definite win with Nurkic and Millsap both
Jokic
out. But then, of course, you know, anytime you start penciling in W's, the Pel's got to go and get an injury, but that's going to be a big road trip for Denver. They play Dallas tomorrow, and then the Pelicans is their second game, but they've got a six-game road trip there. So, you know, we've often complained about Pelicans not catching the teams at the right times. They're starting to catch a lot of the teams at the right times. They just can't take advantage. I mean, Minnesota was dead tired. Utah was dead tired and shorthanded. You know, Minnesota was shorthanded too. They're catching the Warriors on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, they're catching the Nuggets probably two times without Millsap and Jokic. They're catching teams at the right time. I just, you know, they just can't take advantage of it. And that's been the frustrating part.
Yep. All right, prediction. Golden State, Denver, Sacramento, Philadelphia. What you got?
I think 1-3 is safe, but I'm going to go optimistic, and I'm going to go 2-2, and, 2-2.
Yeah, I'm going 2-2 as well.
Okay. So, What?
I think they drop Golden State and Philly.
Okay, so Denver, okay. What would you say is more likely, 3-1 or 1-3? All four games at home?
3-1.
What's more likely, 4-0 or 0-4?
0-4. They're not winning against Golden State. Listen,
you would say likelihood rankings 2-2 most likely, then 3-1, then 1-3, then 0-4, then 4-0.
That's right.
I like it.
Okay. Got anything else?
That's it. Everybody go see The Disaster Artist when it comes to a theater near you. If you haven't seen the movie The Room yet, go ahead and watch it beforehand. And then we got Star Wars the week after.
Yeah. And if you haven't watched Thor, I'll be honest. I don't think I've laughed in a movie like that for years. Like, it was probably the best comedy I've seen in a while.
You do like that kind of nerdy humor. I would have guessed you would have loved that. Have I ever told you my Star Wars theory? Because I think I've seen the Reddits, but I think I'm the only one, or at least I was at the time, after like 5 weeks after the first movie that came out, that pretty much had this theory. But I still think I'm going to be right.
Okay.
I'm 100% sure that Kylo left Rey on the planet. So, like, the whole flashback sequence she has with whenever she, I don't know all the people's names, but when she was at the temple with Maz or whatever.
Yeah.
I am 100% sure that I heard Kylo's voice, and basically Rey sees the ship taking off and all that and gets left behind on the planet. I'm 100% sure that she was there with Kylo for the training or whatever, and he went crazy, and probably his whole Ren, whatever their team is, wanted to kill her and everybody else there. Instead, he erased her memory, dropped her off on the planet, and then left. Have you heard that? Because nobody, but
no. So I gotta tell you one thing. I don't go bother reading other people's thoughts about it. I like to go into the movies with like no idea what's going on. And there's a guy who plays an online game who I refuse to play games with anymore because he actually told me what happened in the movie the day before I was going to go see it.
Ugh.
So I don't play with him anymore. He's a dick. If you ever see Mick36 playing on Overwatch, tell him he's a dick. I kind of have the same feeling that she is probably, you know, was part of that group. Kylo Ren's group murdered everybody, and she was abandoned. But, you know, I'll be pleasantly surprised with whatever they put in front of me.
I don't remember why. I think I saw it 3 times when it was in the theaters, and the third time I went and saw it, I told myself my entire focus was going to be on that scene. And I forgot, I haven't watched it again since, but I forgot why I thought it, but I was entirely focused on that scene when she had the flashback, and I left there 100% sure, so.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
We'll know in a couple weeks.
That's right. So thanks for everybody listening to In the Know.
From earaches to strep tests, there's MinuteClinic at CVS. See a provider, fill a prescription, and grab essentials. Or see us online with telehealth options. That's healthier made easier. Visit MinuteClinic at CVS today. Services vary by location. See MinuteClinic.com for details.